we created this idea called Win the Day. And I know what I have to do every single day to win the day. I can't control what people do. I can't control how they respond or react to me, but I can control my inputs. So it's an equation. Inputs plus time equals outputs. And so I can control my inputs.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Omar Amadea is a partner and financial advisor with J.M. Brown Financial Partners, as well as an entrepreneur with multiple businesses across different sectors. Omar grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but his story is anything but normal. An entrepreneur at heart, he was always finding ways to sell things and start little ventures when he was in elementary school. Unfortunately, while in early high school, he lost a close friend and had to work through the grief of losing someone at a young age. While in college, he found himself in a job quickly learning business in an unconventional way through gambling in Vegas and building a business for someone else. This experience taught him a lot, but ultimately he followed his gut and got out after hearing that what he thought he had been told was not what he thought. A few years later, Omar was diagnosed with cancer. He tells his story of the mindset and perspective he used to overcome and beat cancer. Omar shares the principles he has learned that have enabled him to overcome and succeed in the various setbacks and ventures he has pursued. On the show, Omar shares his story of growing up, overcoming setbacks, intentionality, battling cancer, mindset, finding the lessons in everything, winning the day, being the red ant, building wealth, faith, and following the promptings of God. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Omar Amadea. Omar, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Bailey. Been excited about this.
Yeah. Well, if you wouldn't mind, give our listeners some context to your story and some of the background for you.
Yeah. So I'm in my 30s. I was born and raised here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And my parents are both immigrants from the Middle East, from Lebanon. So it was quite an interesting upbringing as everything was kind of new to everybody here in America. Grew up in public schools, played sports, and then went on to study finance and accounting at Oklahoma State University, and have been really focused in the finance field since graduation. My main business is wealth management, and I do wealth management advising here in Tulsa and around the country. So entrepreneur, got my hand in a few other things, and so that's been a lot of fun just figuring out other businesses. I believe business is a formula that can be applied to all different types of businesses. So we're actually putting that into practice, and it's been a blast. So not married yet, and hopefully that happens here soon, but that's pretty much the synopsis.
Uh-huh. I love it. Well, there's a lot in between your story, but going back to your parents coming from Lebanon, when did they come to the US, and maybe why did they come, and what was that like for them based upon what they've told you coming to a whole different country from Lebanon, which is, you know, going to be very different from the United States?
Oh, it's very different. They came in the 70s, and Lebanon was very like at war, kind of, it's been at war pretty much forever. So there was a civil war that just happened, I believe, at that point, or some type of like really, really severe unrest. And my dad was just like, you know what? I've heard of America, and I've heard of the American dream. And so I'm going to go try this. And so he was the first one kind of from the area, from his family, to do anything like that. And he knew some English, because in Lebanon, you get your schooling in English or French. And obviously you speak Arabic in the country. So, but he took the leap and he came in his 20s and, you know, studied accounting at NSU and got on at Conoco as an accountant. And then he ended up being an entrepreneur as well. And then my mother, so my dad married his best friend's sister. Okay. So that was kind of probably some, you know, delicate waters at first, but he pulled.
Yeah. Well, how did they wind up in Tulsa, out of all places to go to in the United States?
Yeah. So my dad had one friend at the University of Oklahoma. And so he knew of Oklahoma and that was familiar. So he came here to be closer to his friend. And they ended up after college, you know, being roommates and starting work and building a career here in Tulsa.
Yeah. Well, one thing I always love highlighting is just the power of relationships. And so obviously your dad had a buddy at the University of Oklahoma and brought him to Oklahoma and Tulsa, and obviously the rest is history. But at the same time, those relationships are really important. And then also too, with your parents, just taking the step of faith to go to a whole new country and to get out of maybe some familiarity. Obviously they were getting away from some conflict, which is a good thing, but leaving their family behind, you know, stepping into uncomfort and discomfort.
I can't even, I've thought about kind of my biggest risk I've taken, and it doesn't compare. Everything they experienced was new and unknown. And I don't think I've ever put myself in that situation. And I tell my dad, you know, every time like the lottery gets big, you know, my dad will go buy a lottery ticket just because it's, you know, it's, you know, you may as well have a chance to win it. But I always tell my dad, I won the lottery by being born here in the United States. And I always thank him for that. Like, thank you for like taking that risk. Thank you for being bold, because I truly won the lottery. And I believe that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Me too. And very thankful for that. Well, going back to your parents a little bit, growing up, how important was their influence upon you?
Yeah.
And what are the qualities that you look back on that you really appreciate and respect and admire about them?
Yeah, I was blessed with two really, really good parents. They were always there. One thing I really appreciate about my childhood is every single night at like 6 o'clock, we had family dinner. And so that's a very comforting time as a child to just know that you have that support. Proximity, I think, is super important. Parents were very influential. They, in the culture that we come from, academics and performance is huge. So there was a high expectation on that, which at first they were very concerned. I was slow to start reading and kind of a bad student at first. I was very distracted with just students and socializing and just being more of a class clown. Second, third grade, I started to dial it in and started doing better in school. But
work on some calculus at third grade.
Third grade was good. Having that expectation helped, but it also kind of got me into kind of a performance type mindset. And so that I'll talk about that later. We had to break that, but my parents were there. I never felt like I wasn't loved, and I'm very, very thankful for that. I know that's, you know, not as common nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, they were instilling some great qualities around you. What was it like being a young student, but also an athlete? You talked about playing sports. What sports were you playing, and what are some of the things you were doing outside of the classroom that had an impact on you?
Yeah. So I did, I started playing football in fourth grade, you know, started playing flag football and then moved to tackle in sixth grade, and then played that basically my whole life. Made some choice decisions in high school. So that affected some things, but I mean, football was my life for a very, very long time, and it formed who I was. I had some great coaches, went to Union. So growing up through that program, it's pretty excellent. And those guys really instilled a lot in me. You know, I also did martial arts. I was in Taekwondo as a child, and I look back and I didn't realize how much of an influence that was. I just learned a lot about discipline, a lot about perseverance. And I remember that they would always like tell us, finish what you start. I said, I got ingrained in me. I always, you know, I tried to do that in everything I did, finish what I started.
Mm-hmm. And what did that look like in Taekwondo, like the discipline and finishing what you start? Because I'm not super familiar with Taekwondo, but what were those things that you had to do that taught you those lessons?
Yeah. So there's two parts to that martial art. There's the actual art of it. It's called forms, very technical. You have to practice them. It's more of like kind of a choreographic type routine. And then there's sparring. But what I think is to be good at sparring and the actual combat part of it, you have to be good at the technical side. So making sure that, you know, you're punching correctly, your footwork's correctly, and that translates to sparring. And all the training, you know, they took us through quite a bit of like rigorous training. And I remember having to run like 2 or 3 miles at, you know, when I was like 10, it felt like it was 20 miles, but just, you know, them motivating me throughout the whole process. And it instills a lot in you when you start to accomplish that kind of, those kind of things as a child.
Absolutely. And I love that you touched on kind of that, I can't remember what the word you used there at the start for the first phase. What was it?
The forms.
Yeah, the forms. They're probably not something that is enjoyable to do because it might be boring and basic. But if you consistently do those things over time, it enables you to have the success when you're sparring. And that's, that goes across the board into any endeavor that you're in, business, athletics, with your family, doing the things consistently every single day.
Yeah.
Provide your kids the love and care and the support that they see every single day. So there's just so many things that I think bring up great points going back to the two things you just talked about in Taekwondo.
I hated the forms, but now as I get older, they were so important.
Absolutely. Well, whenever you were in high school, what did it look like to go to, were you thinking Oklahoma State in college, or what was that looking like and how did you wind up there?
Yeah, high school was a very interesting season for me. You know, we'll talk about it all. I won't hide anything. I started to really kind of become mischievous around ninth grade. And I guess started hanging out. I mean, it was a good crowd. They're my good friends, still good friends today. But we started just getting in trouble together. You know, just guys that were a little bit aimless and needed some direction. So throughout the whole process, a lot happened. I had a really, really good friend pass away in 11th grade. He overdosed on drugs, and that was like the first taste of mortality, you know, as a young man. I did not know how to deal with that, Bailey. It was really weird. I remember a lot of suppression. I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. I didn't want to talk about it. Very much tried to be a tough guy throughout that. But my senior year of high school, I ended up finding Christ. And that was a huge, huge decision I made, which changed the trajectory of my life. So I wanted to be a dentist. I wanted to be an orthodontist because I remember getting braces and I remember getting them off, and getting them off was like the best thing ever. Like the day after, I had like a girlfriend and it was all, but I remember thinking I would love to be able to do this for others, to help them like correct their smile and make them proud to smile. And then I got my first root canal. And I realized I would hate to work in anyone's mouth. So that's when I changed course to business. And so once I decided that, I knew I wanted to go to Oklahoma State's business school.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I want to go back a little bit to your high school years. You talked about getting a little mischievous, having good friends, but doing some things that were, you know, maybe not the best things to do. What do you feel like, as you look back, what are the things that maybe, if you're guiding young people today, what would you encourage them to do to maybe like try to stay down maybe a little bit different path?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say mentorship is really, really important. I knew if I would have had it, high school would have looked a lot different. I started going to a youth group when I was a senior, and I remember thinking, man, if I had this in like sixth or seventh grade, it would have changed everything. So relationships and mentorship, I don't know why I didn't seek them out. I think I just had too much of an ego and thought I knew too much, but that would have changed the full trajectory of my high school. I feel like I could have made more of an impact, been more of a leader, probably excelled more at sports. That would be my advice. And just figure out who you are, figure out who you want to be, and go do it. Don't let the social aspect of things influence you. I was very much into all that, being cool, being popular, being the life of the party, all that stuff.
Yeah, I've heard someone reference a while back, like in high school, being cool was uncool, you know, as I look back now, right? And I was like, man, that's a great, great perspective, because it really is totally true.
Yeah.
But like you touched on, having mentors and putting yourself around really good people is really key for not just a young person, but any phase of life. It's just having the relationships that we talked about earlier around you that lift you up, that encourage you, that push you forward. And so I think that's great advice. What was it like to lose a very close friend at such a young age to an overdose? And How did that impact you? What were you thinking throughout that season of life as you're going through it? Because that's a really challenging time and season of life.
Yeah, it was, and it was a shot to the gut. You know, it's a tough one. You don't know at that age. I don't think you're equipped to deal with that by yourself. And like I said, it just didn't seem real. You know, I was Paul Bear in his funeral, and so pretty close to the situation, and was with him the night before. So it was kind of scary. I remember a fear, I just kind of feeling fearful and starting to really think about what happens next. Like, you know, death is a real thing. And it was a suppression. The way I dealt with it was very unhealthy. And what would have been cool, and I'm not blaming anybody, is, you know, maybe parents stepping in and saying, hey, let's go see a therapist or talk through this with a professional. But, you know, they didn't know any better at that point. And so it was just me shoving it down and dealing with it a decade later.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. That's not easy to go through. And like you touched on, having people around you, talking it out with other people. I mean, there's so many different aspects that I don't even know all the aspects to it, but just finding people that can help you. And I think that's relative to any situation, but having people around you that can help you in those situations is key.
So, yep.
Well, real quickly, I want to touch on one thing too, because there was an interesting point in your story where I believe, and you can back me up or point me forward in any sense, but you were pretty good at doing some cards, right?
Yeah. I've had my experience with playing some cards. So I remember sharing this story with you. Yeah. When I was, I think I was like 19 or 20, I met a businessman who ended up wanting me to come work at his company. It was a smaller company, probably less than 20 employees. They did technology and satellites and stuff like that. And he saw something in me and wanted me to come do some sales with him. And one thing led to another, ended up working at the company, getting trained up to do sales. And then he told me after that first week of working that there was a second part to his business. And that was, he was a professional gambler. So he was a blackjack player and he was a sports bettor. And he said it was required for me to be a part of that. And at 19, I thought it was a good opportunity to work for him, and I didn't want to say no. So I was like, you know what? Let's try it. So really how that looked was, we flew out to Vegas. That day actually handed me a deck of cards and he taught me the basics of card counting. When you play blackjack, and he would grill me. I mean, he would lay the cards down and he'd ask me what the count was. And if I got it wrong, I mean, he would just rip me a new one until I got it right. And so I remember getting really obsessed with it because I don't like losing and I like to be, I'm very competitive. So, I mean, that's what I did on my spare time. I studied it. I really sharpened that skill. And so we would go out to Vegas and it was a pretty wild experience as it relates to like how good the team was and how good he was at gambling. The first time we went out there, I think he bought in with about 80 grand. And I'm just watching at this point, drinking my Red Bull, just hanging out. And within the next 3 hours, he's up to about $550,000. And it was brilliant. I don't recommend it, obviously, now, but how good he was at that was brilliant. And I got the chance to learn it and was a part of that as well. And the second part of that was sports betting. He was banned from several casinos. He couldn't place bets because he was really good. And I don't know if he had some inside information or what, but this guy was really good. And so I actually developed and put together a team of like five guys where we would place bets for him and do that on the regular. So,
yeah. Well, that's not something you hear very common. And so like the movie that came out a while back, that's your movie, right?
It's pretty much that. They were playing, you know, we were playing high stakes, but they were playing a different level. It was a very interesting experience, you know, along the way. And my takeaways for everyone is there were several points along the way that I knew that I should probably like not be involved. And at 19, 20, 21, I ignored those points. So I always tell people, follow your gut, follow your intuition, follow, you know, the Lord's leaning, whatever you believe. But, you know, some people would look at that because the story is actually very interesting. So I got convinced to start an LLC, and he wanted me to be a distributor of his product in the Midwest. And I ended up doing that. My friend and I ended up moving to Vegas, me and actually three buddies, to work for him. He moved all the operations to Vegas. And there was one situation where we were buying out one of his competitors. It was another company out of Asia that made satellites. And he had mentioned to me, because I own this distributorship. It was a Midwest distributor. He said, Omar, they won't sell directly to me. You have to buy it. And I said, okay. I mean, I'm maybe 20 at that point. I was 19. And I said, I don't feel comfortable having those discussions. He said, I'll train you. I'll teach you. So for the next week, Bailey, we were together almost like all day. And he gave me word for word what to say. It was like I was memorizing kind of a movie script. He said, if they say this, you say this. If they say this, you say this, with this tone. Like, we were talking about tonality. So these guys flew into town from Korea, and we met at the conference room in the Venetian in Vegas, and we negotiated this deal. I messed up. I fumbled a couple times. He was there to help me, but we got it done. And it was I proved a lot to myself because I was so nervous. But here's where the story kind of turns. So we got into the car. I always drove him around. There was five of us in the car, and I asked him a question, and he yelled at me. He cussed at me, and he said, don't ask that in the car. They might have bugged it. And I remember thinking, that's kind of when the world kind of closed on me. And I remember thinking, what are we doing? If there's a chance they're bugging our vehicle, like, we're obviously like up to no good. And that was the first time I finally put the dots together that maybe this whole situation is a situation I need to remove myself from. So I'll bring the story home. It's kind of an interesting one. So I end up going back to my house, break down and cry. I was scared. I didn't know what was going on, you know, what implications there may be. And I call my dad and I said, Dad, I think I got myself in a little pickle. So I laid everything out for him. He said, just come home. And I said, what if this guy kills me? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm starting to like put some dots together. He said, well, he's got to kill me before he kills you. And that was like a milestone, you know, with my dad. I was like, all right, my dad's got my back. And that's good to know. So I ended up coming home like a week later. I resigned. My best friend took over. He's still one of my best friends to this day. And after 4 or 5 months of him operating, he calls me and he said, Omar, everything we've been doing is completely illegal. The product that he created is illegal. It was a satellite receiver that you could download a software onto. And supposedly the software was separate from the business, but he actually owned the software. And so he told us that he didn't, and people were buying these receivers and essentially would allow you to pirate Dish Network, DirecTV, get all the channels for free. And we thought that they were completely unrelated. So the way he would describe it, he's like, hey, I could sell a gun, and you know, one could buy it to go hunting, or one could buy it to do something bad with. I'm just the gun salesman. So like, that made sense to me. Long and short of is this, we realized that we were in a pickle. And we had to come up with a game plan to get out of it. So we ended up becoming informants for Dish Network and working with them directly to build a case and, you know, help them, I guess, come after this guy. My friend Kevin was on the payroll. They were paying him for that. And I was also helping, and they got what they needed, and they ended up filing a lawsuit and protecting us from any criminal charges, anything else. And they were very, very gracious because we were young and we got taken advantage of. So that's that whole story, kind of full circle.
That's a powerful story. And you touched on being young, like you're 19, 20 years old at this time. And you originally got in the business to be in sales, like to help this guy sell.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting point just on the power of maybe pressure or pressure from a boss or employee. Like when you're young, you're just trying to do what you can do to do a good job. And you said you were someone who wanted to achieve and prove yourself. And so you're trying to do that. And he lays that ultimatum out there and you obviously step into it. And I'm sure it can. It's competitive, like you're talking about, counting cards and wanting to win and getting into it. But I love the point that you made on just trusting your gut, because I do think there's some power in trusting your gut. Not all the time, but I think most of the time, our gut, our intuition is something that we should listen to.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
And being able to follow that typically leads to better outcomes than maybe following something that we know might be a little bit iffy or might be a little shaky. It might take us down the wrong path. But I love that point you just made, because it is so powerful to listen to that. And then I think too, the competitive aspect of just wanting to win, like what you're doing in those situations, no matter what you were doing, you didn't know if it was illegal or legal or what it was at the time, but you were trying to be the best at what you're doing and learning and soaking all that up.
I was very committed to that. And he was actually a great salesman, great teacher. And I learned a lot from that guy. Yeah. I don't know his intent was for what happened to have happened, but I still think he had some good motives. But it is what it is. And my takeaway from that was find the lesson. I always find the lesson in everything that happens to me. I think life is one of the best teachers. And then two, fail fast. Failure is going to happen. And then fail forward. Don't let it hold you back. You know, failing fast is important. And then try, fail, adjust. So I did a really good job of brushing past that, putting it behind me and moving on. Now it's a really cool story to tell.
Yeah. Well, what was that like? I mean, because you go from that situation where you're in that position and then you're stepping back into maybe you want to call it the real world, right?
Real world.
Yeah. Did you go to college right after? Was that how that worked? Or were you in college?
College, like throughout the process as well, but right after taking classes online and, you know, but yes, I dialed in right after and got everything completed.
How do you mentally kind of reframe your mindset? Because I'm sure that was a very fast paced, exciting, world to be in. And then going into, you know, finishing up school. I mean, school's not that, you know, not super fast paced, you know, it's a little bit boring sometimes, just being honest, you know, but, and then stepping into the business world, what did that look like for you to be able to learn the lessons that you learned and apply? Because you learned, I feel like in listening to your story, you learned a lot of great lessons that I know you apply in business and your life today. But what did it look like for you at the time?
It was a tough transition. Every day was like really exciting. And I lost the value of a dollar. I mean, we would play with tens of thousands of dollars. And I remember just like, I lost the value of a dollar for a while until I got back to reality. It was a tough transition. I knew that I wanted to transition into business. So I started a roofing company and did that through college. And that really scratched a pretty big itch for me. I get a lot of thrill of closing a deal, closing a sale, generating a new prospect. That's just kind of my favorite thing. And so I was going door to door, knocking on doors, selling roofs, and it was fun. And so I found a way to like create a smooth transition, and it was through business and entrepreneurship. So it wasn't as exciting as that, but it was a nice transition.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been someone who's been prone to want to start up different businesses, or was that just something that kind of initiated right there in your early 20s?
Yeah, my best deal, I was in a little third grade. It was to a girl named Emily. I sold her a pencil and an eraser for $20. And then I remember in ninth grade, I would go to Sam's with my parents and buy sour Skittles, and I would sell them out of my backpack. And so it would make $20 a day. So yes, I have. It's always been something I've enjoyed. I don't know what it is about it, but I just love it. I think it's in my blood.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you started a roofing company, and then what did you wind up going to do?
After roofing, I finished college. My senior year of college, I got diagnosed with cancer, and that was a little bit of a curveball. So had to navigate those waters and just kind of put everything on hold until I got through that. and we can get back to that if you'd like. And then after I got through that, I jumped into my career as a wealth management guy, and have done that for about a decade now.
Well, let's go into wealth management. I'm just kidding. No, I want to dive back into your cancer story, because that's something that is extremely significant to be in your early 20s, diagnosed with cancer. Yeah. But whenever you found out, what was going through your mind?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it was a very interesting season. It's really hard to put into words, but leading up to the diagnosis, I knew something was off, and I was searching for answers. Something, it just did not feel right. I felt like I was running at 50% every part of me. My voice, it was hard to talk. I could tell my eyesight was just not as good. My hearing was not, everything was just compromised. It's weird to explain it. And I don't know if you've had mono, but it felt like I had mono for 8 months, just tired, tired, tired all the time. I thought it was just nutritional, or need more sleep, or drink more water. So I was playing basketball one day, and I just had this really bad pain in my chest, right over my, left chest. And it would happen when I would breathe, when I inhale or exhale, at the top of my inhale, bottom of my exhale. So I had to stop playing ball, and I just drove to the ER, and I was just I just need to figure this out. Maybe I tweaked a rib or took a hit or something. And I just asked them to scan. I just said, scan right here. Something's wrong. They scanned, they did an X-ray, and then they asked me to go do a CT scan. And I thought that was interesting. At that point, it was just nurses and techs that I had dealt with. And then a doctor came into the room. It was just me and my buddy Matt, who I was playing ball with. And she's like, "Hey, Omar, I want to share some things with you. Are your parents here?" And I was just like, "Ma'am, they're not here. They're at dinner. What do you got for me? Just lay it on me. What's going on?" She's like, "I really want your parents to be here." I was like, "Listen, I'm a grown man. Hit me with it. There's nothing that you can say that, I would need to hear with my, that I couldn't hear by myself." And she's like, "I really want your parents here." I said, "Ma'am, just tell me." I was really upset. And she looked at me. I think I had made her mad. She said, "Okay, we think you have cancer." That was not what I was expecting to hear. I thought I had broken a rib or something. And I felt the words hit me. And it was a very surreal, kind of a surreal moment. So I asked her to leave. I had got some time by myself, and my friend and I just said a prayer. And then I did call my parents up, because I thought that they should come up and talk to the doctor. And it was just a bad day. My mom passed out. My dad's sitting there watching his son get diagnosed with cancer. His mom, his wife passed out. And now they're trying to take care of her because she has heart issues. And I just remember thinking, this sucks. This really sucks. So I got home at the end of the day after, all the support and family was not around. It was me, my pillow, and my thoughts. And I remember that day, and I just couldn't, there was no escape, right? In school, if you have a test, you just study, you pull an all-nighter and you study. In sports, you practice, you train, you just get better, and then you go perform. In business, you do the same thing. But this one was, there was nothing. There was nothing I could do. And it was just a weird power. I was very powerless. I never felt that way in my life. And so over the course of the next week or two, I just kind of figured out my approach. I had great support at my church. And I decided that hey, this is just a word. And a lot of people have overcome it. And I'm just going to decide. And listen, I'm not saying I have this power, but I remember thinking, I'm just going to decide that I'm going to get better and that God's going to take care of me. And anything else that enters my mind, I'm just going to reject it. And so I embodied, by the grace of God, I embodied health. And I convinced myself that I was healthy. So I started chemotherapy, went through that whole process. After 4 treatments, it was fully gone. And we did a few more after that, and it was a 5-month process. And I'll tell you, Bailey, it was seemingly the worst thing that could have happened to me, but it was the best year of my life.
Hmm. That's really interesting. Let's dive into that, because for those listening, to get hit with that, especially at such a young age, you go in, you think you maybe pulled a muscle or had a rib, you know, get bruised or something like that, and you're hit with cancer.
Yeah.
The impact of that, but then having to go through chemo to battle through that.
Yeah.
What I really loved is I loved your mindset, what you just talked about. Getting through it, getting better. What in the moments that you were, you know, doing chemotherapy, going through this, what goes through your mind and how do you have that perspective and how do you continually work forward to get better?
Yeah.
Especially, I know we'll talk about here in a little bit, the performance perspective mm-hmm. that probably we've all grown up with, or most of us have grown up with our talent, especially in athletics, right? And business. But how did you get through it? And what was your mental perspective going through chemotherapy?
Yeah. I decided that everything I was going to take in during that season was going to bring life. Cause I just kind of viewed it as an equation. Like, you bring in good, you'll have good fruit. You'll have good outcomes. If you bring in bad, you know, you'll have bad energy, whatever you want to call it. And so if I wasn't reading motivational stuff, scripture, I had it in my ear. And I made this, like, I got obsessed with it. And honestly, I think there's something to this. I made this like confessional of me confessing, like, it was my voice kind of confessing like positive affirmations and scriptures about my health and about my life. It was about 5 minutes long. And I played that all night on repeat. And so it was in my subconscious. It got into my soul. And if I wasn't like with people during the day, it was in my ear, like you have headphones on, it was in my ear. It was literally 24/7. And I remember one day after about 3 weeks of that, I remember thinking, I believe this. Like, I believe this, like everything I've heard or everything I said on this recording, I believe. And that's when something shifted. You know, if you believe, and if you have this image of yourself, I personally think, you know, maybe the body follows, maybe the health follows. I don't know that for a fact, but it worked for me. And I think there's something there, but, I decided that I wasn't going to let chemo get me. I was working full time. So I got a job at a bank. It was a 7 day a week bank. It was right after college. I literally graduated college May 25th, started working May 26th, started chemo May 27th.
Wow.
And I worked at a 7 day a week bank. So I would do my 40 hours. I would work the weekends because I wanted the weekdays to do my treatment. So I'd go in every 2 weeks, I'd get zapped. I would have the next day off, and then I would work the next 5 days for 40 hours. And I would do that. And there was only one day I went home during lunch and I overslept because I took a nap for 30 minutes. I was 30 minutes late after lunch, but I didn't miss one day of work. And I'm not saying that to brag, but you know, God's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Looking back on that, you talked about that being one of the best years of your life.
Yeah.
What did you learn in that season that makes you feel that way about that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I was stopping and smelling the roses in everything that I did. I was always, before that, I was always in a hurry. I was always rushed. I was always focused on my goals, but I prioritized things that matter. And I was very intentional with my time. For example, you know, it was as simple as just like, I remember thinking, I want to be fully present for every conversation that I have. I want to look people in the eyes. I want to ask genuine questions. And it was really cool. I remember, you know, when you're faced with the chance of like dying, you know, you approach, that's when you really start living. And so I was just bold, man. I would go talk to people. I'd go pray with people. I was just bold. I was living the way I wanted to live. It was a very adventurous and bold life. And it took a death sentence to get me there.
Yeah.
And I think we should do that all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm taking notes right now. And as you said that, it really speaks to just being present and enjoying where we're at, because there's so many things at us that are coming each and every day where it's easy to think about tomorrow or, you know, 30 days from now, a year from now, 5 years from now. But being present today is what matters most, because we don't know if we're guaranteed those days. And I know that's said often, but when you are really hit with that, the perspective that you have now throughout your life, that's why I love that you said it was one of the best years of your life, because a lot of people would say, how is that one of the best years of your life? But your perspective to learn and grow from every situation that you've been in and from every failure and moving forward is really important, and something that, you know, I'm writing down because I need to remind myself of that daily. So
I do too. I really do too. I'm glad that could, you know, hopefully that helps somebody.
Absolutely. It definitely does. Well, whenever you thankfully beat cancer, all right, what does it look like now to what are you doing, you know, from a professional standpoint, and how does, you know, what does the outcome look like on the trajectory of what you were doing?
Yeah, I think a lot of myself, I think a lot of me, a lot of the bad parts of me died during that cancer battle. And so I always tell people, I haven't really had a bad day since then. It puts a lot into perspective. After I finished college, I became a financial advisor, and I did my first 5 years at a big company and just kind of got my foundation there. Then after that, I went independent and I merged with another guy, former Wall Street guy, awesome guy. We combined and merged, and now we're growing together. And I don't know, I just love what I do. I love work. I love business. It's the closest thing to like athletics, I think, as an adult that you can do if you're not a pro athlete. And I think it's very, very, if you're an athlete and you're listening, if you could connect the dots between winning in sports and winning in business, if you can make that connection, that competitive connection, that's very, very powerful. It took me about 7 years to do that. In my work, in my line of work, it took me 7 years to do that, but it's fun. I feel like I get to go compete and play a game every single day.
That's awesome. And not only are you a financial advisor, but you own a lot of different businesses and you invest. Why is that important? And then maybe let's dive into the financial aspect of what it means to truly build wealth and just kind of your perspectives on that.
Yeah, I've been blessed. I own a few different businesses. I own a heating and air and service company here in town. We do a bunch of real estate here in town, and we have a nutritional company as well. So we're staying busy. I want to grow that. And, you know, you grow by meeting good quality people. So where I'm at in my life is my financial practice is my main focus. It's my baby. It's my bread and my butter. And I partner with people that are passionate on my other companies. So finding someone that loves what they do, that maybe needs some resources, that's where we come in. We partner with them, and it creates that duplication effect. Finance has been great. You know, I grew up in a family. As I got older, I kind of grew as my dad did better. But man, when we were young, I don't know. I need to ask my dad, but I don't think we had a lot. Just kind of thinking back, I remember dressing different. Never had cool shoes until, you know, later in life. And so finances have always been a thing. And I thought, you know, I heard a quote once, 50% of marriages end in divorce. Most of those, you know, probably could be prevented if most of those are financial problems or if the finances were figured out. So I remember getting to this thinking, man, what if I helped save marriages, like just bringing clarity to that area so they could focus on other areas. And that's what has really motivated me. I love to work with people. I love to help them figure out their goals. And I love to be the guy that helps them navigate these waters, because I become their advocate. If someone calls, we work with really wealthy people, tries to sell them something or an idea. A lot of times they just give them my number and they got to get past me first. And I just kind of love being that gatekeeper. For the younger people listening that are more accumulators, you know, I've done this. I've spent the 10,000 hours in front of clients, and I've really extracted, I think, some principles that are important. If you sat down anyone that's intelligent and you ask them, what does it take to develop a good financial plan? I think most people can back into like what to do, right? It's not it's not rocket science. You got to save, you got to be committed, you got to max out your Roth, you know, get some real estate. It's not rocket science. What I've found though, the people that are most successful, they have a strong financial why. And that why drives all of their financial decisions. So that's what I do with the people I work with. I help them create, especially the younger ones, I help them create that financial why that drives their decisions. Because if you don't have that why, the new iPhone is always going to win. Starbucks daily, if you're trying to break it, but you have to drive by it to work every day, it's probably going to win. But if you have that why, which mine is, I want to continue the legacy that my dad started to impact the next generation, because he took such a big risk and I feel responsible to continue it. That's a pretty strong why. And so I don't care about the new iPhone. I don't even drink coffee anymore. And so those decisions become a lot easier when you have a passion and a drive that's driving them. And so I start there. I start with the emotional side of finance, because the practical side is, it's actually really, really easy.
Absolutely. What about, you talked about driving by Starbucks or maybe going by and seeing the iPhone and wanting it. How important is discipline in creating good habits so that you don't have those things pop up as much, because you're building a framework so that it complements your why?
I'll tell you, discipline in everything is everything. Anything that you want to be successful at is going to require discipline, because motivation eventually fades. So I have disciplines in my work. I had a coach who I believe was on this show before. We created this idea called win the day. And I know what I have to do every single day to win the day. I can't control what people do. I can't control how they respond or react to me, but I can control my inputs. So it's an equation. Inputs plus time equals outputs. And so I can control my inputs. And so I've committed to those disciplines. And it's the same thing with health. It's the same thing with fitness. It's the same thing with relationships. But discipline is absolutely everything.
So give an example, maybe. What does that look like for you, or just for other people listening in and wanting to develop creating good inputs and creating a framework to win the day? What is that? What would be good examples of how they can go about doing that so that they can apply it?
Great, great question. So you have to figure out what you want your result to be, and then you just simply kind of reverse engineer it. And then you break it down to like, okay, what does this need to look like every day? So I know that I want to bring in X amount of clients with X amount of dollars every single year. And I track everything. So every call that I make, I track that. And so now I know, so I could tell you how many calls I make in a year. I used to be very fanatical at tracking this, and how much money I made, new money I made that year. And I would divide that and I would say, all right, every call I make is $100. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, oh, that's easy to pick up the phone. Go pick up the phone X amount of times a day. So figure out what you want, figure out your outcome, and then divide it, and then figure out what you want your day. So mine is, I need to make 25 point of contacts with either clients or new prospective clients. I need to see 3 people a day. I need to be in front of 3 clients or 3 prospects a day. And I need to make 1 new meaningful connection a day, whether it's a LinkedIn message, like a meaningful connection, whether it's at a coffee shop meeting somebody. And that stuff usually translates into good things, whether it's in finance or in a partnership on another business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Say that one more time.
The 25 point of contacts a day, it may not seem a lot, but if you do that for a decade, that's a lot.
Absolutely.
And
I think even just if someone's listening and they're just trying to make 1 new contact a day, and then maybe build it up to 5, maybe then 15, then 20, then 25, or whatever it is for people, it's just figuring out, asking the question, like, what does that look like? How can I apply it? And then actually having the discipline, like you talked about earlier, to go and do it. But it doesn't have to be super big. It can be super small at the start, and then it can grow and build. But it depends on each person and your goal and your why, right?
Yeah. Action plus time equals compounding effect. If you keep doing it, I read a book. It was Atomic Habits before Atomic Habits. It was called The Slight Edge. Okay. And that book changed my life. So basically, there are things that you can do, little things that you can do, or little things that you can't do on a daily basis that have a significant impact. For example, he said, if you read 10 pages a day on one topic, just one topic, if you did that for a month, you wouldn't know much about the topic. But if you did that for a decade, 10 pages a day on one topic, you would be one of the top experts on that topic in the world. And so his other example was, you could eat a double bacon cheeseburger today, not going to affect your health. But if you ate one every day for 10 years, you're probably going to have super high cholesterol. And so it's those little things that over time add up. So I don't know if you guys have studied the red ant. The red ant just works. It doesn't do much, but it just works and works and works and works. And I try to base my life off of that. Like I'm not trying to change the world this year, but maybe after 40 years, we can make an impact. And Craig Rochelle said this in one of your questions. I'm jumping ahead, Bailey. What's a quote that you've heard? He said something like this: most people overestimate what they can do in 2 years and underestimate what they can do in 10. And I'm a 10-year guy. Like I'm starting to think in decades because, you know, I know that it just takes time. It's time in the seat, time in the seat, time in the seat. You can't do anything without time in the seat.
I love that. And I think it's really important to have that long-term perspective. Obviously you have goals in the short term. You're trying to win the day, winning the day each and every day provides you to win the month, win the month, year, win the 5 years, win 10 years, win 20, and make an impact like you're talking about, and leaving that legacy that your dad left for you. And now you're leaving for other people.
That's right.
So I love that. Well, real quickly, as we kind of wind down here, there's a powerful story that I've heard you tell, but I also want to dive in because I didn't want to kind of dive into faith throughout every single story because I wanted to culminate it here at the end. You talked about your faith being super important to you, and you were able to kind of find faith senior year of high school. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's built over time, but how did your faith play a part in all these different situations and scenarios, and how has it been a foundation for you, and why is it important?
That's a great question. You know, at the end of the day, my identity is in Christ. And the results don't, and it's becoming more and more real. The results don't impact who I am. The result, it's just what I do. And so disassociating your identity from the results, I think helps because I get to go back home and know that, like, I'm God's child and I get to go out and make an impact every single day. Mother Teresa said, at all times, preach the gospel. When appropriate, use words. That's my life. I used to be like the guy that would try to preach to everybody. And I still do. Right. But man, we have such many interactions on a daily basis. And I just want to like have that special touch or have that special impact on people. And if I can get them to kind of wonder, man, that guy's different. Like, I wonder what's up with that guy. And maybe at some point a question will come up and I can share my faith with them or share my journey with them. But I think the most important thing is like, hey, if you know your dad is always going to love you, that changes the way you approach life. And that's how it is with God. Like, there's nothing I can do that's going to change his love. And I get to go out every day, full as I'll get out, and go represent. And, you know, there may be a better way to articulate that, but it's just, there's a different approach when you know that you're just loved.
Absolutely.
To be honest, but I do now.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to what your dad told you back in the day. Yep. He's like, they're going to have to come through me first.
That's right.
Very relative. And how
much more is it with God? Like,
absolutely. So, well, going into that too, because you talked about performance earlier.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on this because it is a real challenge in our society. How is it, and it relates to faith too, how is it important, or how can you go about not letting your performance drive everything that you do? I mean, it needs to be important, right? We want to achieve and succeed and do things right and well, but how do you not let that be all that you're about to where it just, it'll weigh, the pressure will weigh on you. Everything that you do is about winning, 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 winning.
Yeah. That was me for a long time, Bailey. So I think I can speak directly to that. You have to be intentional about separating the two and knowing that you're not what you do, but actually embodying that and like really, really knowing it are two different things. And so it's been a process. Like I truly believe, you know, I have a very loose grip on everything that I have. You know, it's been a great last decade, has been amazing. I've been super blessed, but I really believe like it's a daily discussion with God, like, you know, really defining my role and my part in this. I would just say, just think about it daily, pray about it daily, and allow God and the Holy Spirit to help you separate the two. You know, we are a child of God, so we get to go do this. And I think if someone can really, really internalize that, being the child of God is never going to change. And so I don't know. It's hard to put into words, but what I would say is just be conscious of it and think about it daily and really try to get it into, you know, your soul that I'm not what I do. You know, everything could be taken away and I'm a human being, not a human doing. And know that your identity comes from what's already been established and said about you, not what we accomplish. I think it's just a daily reminder, just like those affirmations. If you keep doing that, one day you'll wake up and you'll really, really, really believe that.
Absolutely.
And situational as well. Like as things come up and you may have had a bad meeting and you leave feeling like you're not enough, you got to coach yourself. You got to go back to your office and just say, no, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm going to learn. I'm going to find the lesson because I'm excellent, but it's not because I'm trying to gain acceptance from my boss or from what I do. So it's a daily dialing in is what I would say.
Yeah. A huge level of intentionality, to be intentional about the way you think about things is great. 100%. I love it. But yep. Going into that as well, the intentionality of following the promptings of God. I've heard you tell a story about one day you were doing that and you wound up finding a guy on the side of the road. Well, if you wouldn't mind, just kind of elaborate on that story.
Yeah, this was a fun one. It was when I was going through chemo. So I was the sickest I've ever been. And it was that season of my life where I was really, 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 really intentional. And I was at home. I was at home with some buddies. We were just kind of hanging out. And, you know, my friends were good during that time. And they still are, but they prayed for me. And it was super special, just really rallying around me. And I just kind of felt like I had to go. Kind of sounds weird, but there's this really bad intersection in Tulsa. And I just felt like I needed to go there. And I just knew there was a guy I had to go pick up, you know, just, it is what it is. So I hopped in my car with my buddy and we drive, we're a mile away. We're approaching the intersection and lo and behold, at like 1 a.m. in the morning, there's this guy. And I knew he was African-American male wearing a white shirt, walking west. That's all I knew. And there he was. So I get out of my car. I'm sure, as you can imagine, not well received, 1 a.m. in the morning, just some random guy walking up to you. So he's very, you know, very apprehensive, very kind of defensive. And I just said, hey, is there anything I can do for you? He asked me to leave him alone. I said, I'm here. Like, do you need anything? He's like, yeah, mind your own business. Leave me alone. And I just said, hey, man, this may sound weird, but I was praying and I felt like I needed to come at least just like talk to you. What do you need? And his like defense came down and he said, can you give me a ride home? I said, absolutely. Hop in my car. His name was Isaiah and he was walking from work, which was 7-8 miles away. And he was walking towards his house, which is across the river. So he was headed that direction. So I give him a ride home and we pass the river, drive over the bridge, get to his house. And as he's about to get out of my car, I ask him if he needs anything. So we end up praying with him. Turns out his dad's passed away. His mother, you know, unfortunately, like been strung out on drugs. His girlfriend just left him. He doesn't have a car, barely has a house to stay in. Life has just really done its deal on him. And so we prayed with him and I could tell he was just getting kind of encouraged and rededicated his life to the Lord and all that. And he gets out of my car. He thanks me. He gets out of my car And then he gets back in and he's like, Omar, I just got to share something with you. You're not going to believe this. It's like, what you got? And he said, life's been very, very difficult. And I have to make this walk several times a week. I walk across the bridge, and I had decided that tonight was the night I was going to jump off. And, you know, obviously God had a different plan for him, and I got to be a part of that. But, you know, if I didn't respond, you know, what would have happened? I believe God would have figured it out, you know, but I'm just glad I got to be a part of that. And I said yes to something that was kind of out of the box, very risky. And it turned out to be one of my coolest stories ever.
But yeah. You follow the promptings of feeling like God led you to go there.
I followed
in the middle of the night.
The middle of the night to a really, really bad part of town.
What an amazing story.
Well, yes, it was. I'm honored to be a part of it. It was cool. And honestly, we all need to follow those promptings more. And as that time lapses from when I was sick, I'll be honest, I don't follow it as much as I did. And so that is a goal of mine, is to be a little bit more intentional there.
Yeah. Hopefully all of us, that's our goal. That's definitely, you know, one of mine, as you say that story. So I love that. Well, real quickly, I've got a little fire round for you. So I'll say a sentence and you can finish with the word or sentence, however you feel led. You can do anything if.
You burn the boats.
Focus means.
Eliminating distractions.
Favorite vacation spot.
I love anything tropical, anything Caribbean.
Okay. Awesome. Resilience means.
How far you can bend and not break.
Do you have a favorite book?
I like, I said it earlier, The Slight Edge. I don't know why I love that book. And then another book called Chop Wood, Carry Water by Josh Metcalf.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
It all comes down to
commitment.
Awesome. We're done with the fire round. That was great. The final two questions I have for you, is there a certain piece of best advice that you haven't already shared, and what would it be?
Yeah. It's pretty simple. Easy choices equals hard life. Hard choices equals easy life. I look at that pretty much daily.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that just popped in my mind, because I'd really like to hear your perspective on it. But yeah, if you had a slogan for your life that you wanted to listen to every single day, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. I would say chop wood, carry water.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. It's the mundane. It's the discipline. It's the little gritty things that no one wants to do, that if you do them, you're going to separate yourself.
Absolutely. 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 Well, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
Yeah. Building excellence means going through life, doing life, making mistakes, finding the lesson, making the adjustments, and becoming outstanding and exceptional. I think that's excellence. I mean, it's just something that we can strive to do. Life is very imperfect. I think everyone should give themselves a little bit of a break, but I believe life happens for you, not to you. And so find the lesson, make the adjustments, and continue to work on yourself and become that excellent version of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Well, Omar, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your story, and thanks for making the impact that you have. And like you touched on that story just a second, just being willing to fall in the promptings of God, it's something that I think is really powerful if we choose to look for it and be intentional with our time and our daily decisions. And you've obviously done that, made an impact on a lot of people.
Bailey, thank you, man. You're doing some great things. I love your podcast. I love what you're up to, and honored to have been a part of it today.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.